Hey friend, welcome to the Mamahood After Trauma podcast. I'm your host, Emily Cleghorn. This podcast is for mamas navigating childhood trauma while also walking through mamahood. I'm so excited that you've decided to take some time out of your day to join me and tune in. I hope you find this podcast uplifting and empowering. Let's get to it. Hey there. Before we jump into this episode, I want to let you know about something that is brand new that you have access to as a Mamahood After Trauma listener. Now, tell me, does this sound like you? You want to give your littles a positive childhood experience. You want the steps to finally heal your childhood trauma. You're tired of the fear holding you back in life, and you enjoy being a mama, and you want to be more present. If you answered yes to any of the above, I would invite you to check out the Mama Untriggered private podcast series. This is a 5-part private podcast series that teaches you how to ditch the emotional roller coaster and bust out of the fear controlling your mamahood. Let's teach you how to calm your nervous system through small, simple steps. I mean, parenting books and workshops are great, but we believe it's better to give you short, actionable audio clips that allow you to take action right away so that they can't escape from your mom brain, right? If this sounds at all interesting to you, I would invite you to head over to subscribepage.io/mamauntriggered. That's subscribepage.io/mamauntriggered. Now, let's go into this episode of the Mamahood After Trauma podcast. Hello, hello, friends, and welcome to this episode of the Mamahood After Trauma podcast. I am so excited that you have taken some time out of your busy, busy day to tune in and listen to the conversation. Today, we are joined by Phyllis Levitt. Welcome to the show, Phyllis.
Thank you so much for having me here today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you. Let's dive right in and get started by having you introduce yourself to the audience and share a little bit of how you came to be working in the trauma space.
Yeah, well, I've been a psychotherapist for over 30 years and just recently retired and focused on writing. But I got into the field of psychotherapy really as a result of having gone to therapy myself as a young mother. And it really changed my life to begin to understand, first of all, to begin to understand trauma, but also to understand how our early conditioning and mine and probably many of the people that you're speaking with experienced trauma as part of my early conditioning. And it really shaped my life in ways that I had no understanding of. It shaped the kind of people I was attracted to, the kind of reactions I had, the feelings I had about myself, my own coping mechanisms. It really shaped all of that. And going to therapy for the first time was a big eye-opener for me. And I ended up going to graduate school in psychology out of that and having a private practice all these years. And I worked with quite a bit of trauma in my private practice. And I guess I will just say that there's quite a bit of trauma in our society. It's not the rare person that has emotional trauma or sexual trauma or physical abuse or discrimination at large in our society or poverty. It's actually quite common. And so, you know, I don't think I had an unusual experience as a therapist or as an individual myself.
Yeah, it really is common. It seems to be something that is so deeply woven into our society.
Yeah.
That it's almost hard to escape.
I agree with you 100%. I really do. Like, and one of the things I found as a therapist, and I was one of these people, you know, I looked very functional on the outside. I was a good student. I went to college. I got good grades. I went to graduate school. I got a job. You know, I looked okay. I looked like I was coping. Inside, it did not feel like that at all. And I think there's a lot of people who are in the same boat. They look okay, but they don't feel okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I would fall under that category as well. I looked okay. I was on the honor roll all through school, almost on the dean's list in university. But on the inside, it was a raging fire.
Right. Right. And for me, it was, like, I would say that raging fire took the form of actually of depression and anxiety and a lot of fears and, you know, sort of like always trying to hide the level of pain that I felt like I carried around.
Yeah. Trying to hide what was really going on. For me, it was out of fear of looking weak, of being viewed as crazy, or, you know, Emily's not perfect. She doesn't have her stuff together. She's falling apart. She's, you know.
Totally. And for me, it was also a fear of that somehow that pain made me a flawed individual.
Yeah.
And I didn't want anyone to see that.
Because
I really believed that. I believed that for a really long time.
Yeah. Yeah. I can resonate with that. So what was your journey like going from having a facade of I'm okay and the raging fire on the incredible misalignment between what's going on the inside and what's you're portraying to everyone else, to what was your healing journey like through that?
Yeah. And, you know, I had little kids at that time. And and so I had three little kids. So it was, you know, there was like
you are busy.
A lot I had to juggle on the outside while I was trying to manage the inside. And when I first went to therapy, it was like peeling off some of the protective layers. And I have to say, it was really hard. It was really painful. And I felt like the juggling act got more intense. I wouldn't say I regret a moment of it, though, because I think there's something innately in us that searches for wholeness. And living in that divided state of consciousness is excruciatingly painful. The desire for wholeness was stronger than the resistance around feeling the pain. And actually, you can't resist it because you feel it anyway.
Yeah.
So it was a deep journey. It was, you know, fortunately, and I went to many therapists, you know, it took me a long time to sort of find the one that could really go down into the depths of it with me. And that's okay. You know, not every therapist can do that. And also I might not have been ready, you know? But so it was difficult, but it was really gratifying. Like I never missed a session. I never missed a session because my hunger for wholeness and healing and reclaiming my true self was really strong. And I think we have that as individuals. And I think we have that as a society. I'll just say that. I think there are many people that are hungry for that if they had the opportunity to explore it. And we know, of course, that many people don't have that opportunity. And I will just say this, that even as a very, I think started maybe as a young, very young teenager, I had moments of breakthrough into a connection to something much more profoundly whole and loving and connected within myself. I just couldn't maintain that. But it gave me hope. It gave me hope that it was possible. And I think we need that. And one of the things that I really concentrated on as a therapist myself was to say to people, there is light at the end of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. Because if I made it through that darkness, you can too. And I think we need that from each other. We need to know that the healing journey is actually possible. And it's not like I'm all healed, because I don't think anybody's all healed. You know, we're on a journey. But I don't live in that dark space anymore. I don't. And so it was a profound journey. And I'm really grateful that I had the opportunity to make it. And mm-hmm. we need safe people in our society, therapists and other kinds of healers, to make that journey with, because I couldn't have done that alone. And I think most of us can't make it alone.
No, I would agree that there are certain aspects that you can do on your own. There are things that you can do to help yourself, but there is a level that is deeper that you need guidance, you need support, and you need the support of someone who knows what they're doing.
Right. And you need, so one of the things that happened for me on my journey that was not unlike many people, once I started to uncover some memories of what had happened to me, which had been buried, I was able to leave my marriage, which was a profound turning point in my life, because I was repeating some of the bad things that I felt about myself in that relationship. You know, the messages that I wasn't really lovable, or I couldn't be heard, or I didn't have any power, whatever. You know, I wasn't in a marriage where there was violence, physical violence, but emotionally, it was really painful. And doing that inner work allowed me to leave. And I'm not saying it got totally easy right away, because then I was a single mom, you know, but it was the best thing that I ever did. I had to do it. And I think, you know, I've had clients who feel like they'll never leave a bad relationship. But once they start to work on their own healing and finding that child in them that was really hurt and took on so many negative beliefs about themselves and so many less than functional coping mechanisms, because it's the best we can do when we're kids, they do leave and they do find healthier relationships. And I did. You know, I was a single mom for a long time, and my attractions changed, you know, and I'm in a very happy marriage now, and I feel extremely fortunate. But that's the hope I want to give people, you know, that healing work can change the whole trajectory of your life.
Yeah, it can. It is incredibly powerful. What are some of your biggest takeaways from your own journey?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot. I'll name two things that come to my mind right away, is that one of the greatest gifts that we can give each other is to see that essence that's buried under whatever the trauma was. Mm-hmm. I knew that I had that, but I don't think I ever really had that reflected back to me or even named. Mm-hmm. A long time in my life. And now, you know, that's part of my language now. There is an essence that's buried underneath whatever happened to us. Mm-hmm. And we all have it. And it's pure, it's innocent, it's bright and shining, it's full of love and is capable of love. And usually for each person, I think it contains certain gifts, whatever that is, that need and want to be released and expressed in the world. So, you know, that's one of the things that I found myself. I feel like I found that essential place. And so that's one of the things that I want to share with the whole world, is we all have that. You are not what happened to you.
Amen. You are not, amen.
Right? You are not what happened to you. And also just to say, because I love this part of it too, none of us, I think, are free from having hurt other people as well.
No.
You know, the hurt part of us inevitably will hurt somebody. I mean, whether it's just I hurt your feelings, or I said something that, you know, really didn't land well with you, or I ignored you, or I shamed you, or whatever I did, we all have both. And sometimes it's easier to look at the part that was victimized rather than the part that maybe wasn't kind in a certain moment to another person. And I want to say, you're not that either.
Mm-hmm.
We are not the worst thing that ever happened to us, and we're not the worst thing we've ever done. Mm-hmm. And there's always room for making amends to the people that we've hurt. And I think that's an important part of growth, that it's not a shameful thing to take responsibility either.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredibly powerful.
Yeah. So finding that essence and talking about that essence and presencing in that essence, but also, like, for me, as working with people, seeing that essence, you mm-hmm. know, just on a vibrational level. It doesn't even have to be named, but you look at somebody like they are a beautiful human being who's hurting, and you want to be of service to help them mm-hmm. unravel some of that hurt. It's just the most amazing gift that you can give another person. And I know that for me, the first time I remember feeling seen that way, I will never forget. And it wasn't in my childhood. You know, it was later, right? So that's one big takeaway. I had another one that came to mind. Let me see if I can remember what it was. Because there's probably 100. Let's see. Well, ask me another question and then I'll come back to that.
So
there's a lot of takeaways.
Yeah. So what are one or two things that a mama listening who may feel maybe living mm-hmm. in that misalignment, that unalignment of portraying that she's got her stuff together and feeling not together yeah. on the inside and trying to portray like she's okay and she's really not.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be the biggest thing I would say is find someone to talk to. Mm-hmm. Don't knuckle it. You know, I did for a while. And it was the biggest relief to have someone to start to unburden that part of myself with. And I had to work through the shame that I had about feeling like such a flawed human being. And why didn't I have it all together? And how come I hadn't made a better choice of a relationship or a marriage? And because I felt like my kids were hurting too. And mm-hmm. And so that was just, that was a lot to deal with of like, you can't be a good student as a mom. Like it's an emotional job, right? You can learn things about parenting for sure. And I did, but it's an emotional thing. And one of the things that I found, and I don't know if you found the same thing, but having children brings up all your stuff. If you thought you could
bury something, does it?
If you thought you could bury something, you can't. It's in your right. And in some ways, our children are our greatest teachers. Mm-hmm. And we have, you know, parenting is sort of being the one to lead the way. But in fact, there's a whole other aspect where our children teach us about ourselves. And mm-hmm. and my children were really instrumental in that for me. And I would just say, you know, I still have regrets that I wasn't a more powerful mother, that there were choices that I wasn't able to make that were better for my kids during some of their formative years. And, you know, they've all grown up to be magnificent human beings. And we talk about it. And I can still cry about mm-hmm. some of the things that happened that I wish I could undo. But, you know, I didn't have parents, and I think it was partly my parents' generation, but I didn't have parents who could ever say, I'm sorry,
yeah.
or I could have done that better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would have really helped me, you know, mm-hmm. that I didn't take it all on myself. And I think that's one of the things I learned as a mother, that it was okay mm-hmm. to say, you know, I didn't handle that well, and mm-hmm. I'll do it differently next time. And even when they were young, you know, mm-hmm. I would like examine the way I was being and try to do it better. You know, my way was mostly to shut down and criticize myself and I just wasn't a powerful mother. I think that I didn't protect my kids in a way that I wish that I could have done. Mostly from, you know, the dysfunction in our family, I would say. But I got out, as soon as I could get out, you know, and I learned and I healed as fast as I could. Mm-hmm. They know that. I think they know that. And I think that's what we can do. And I think, you know, there were a lot of years where I really had so much criticism of myself. And I feel like, you know, this is a journey we made together. They taught me. I did the best I could for them. I love them dearly. Mm-hmm. I think they always felt that. And we love each other dearly now. And, you know, this is the human journey. Mm-hmm. I don't know people will make it perfectly. I don't think that's what we're doing here. I think we're learning as we go.
Yeah. So outside of finding someone who you can talk to, are there any other steps that a mama could take to help herself feel more in alignment or discover that for the first time?
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's things that I learned along the way. Like I read a book when my kids were little, and it's a little outdated. I don't know, but I think there's still some great value in it. And it was something like how to talk so children will listen and listen so children will talk. And that was a great asset to me because when I read that book, it was the first time I realized that I have a lot to do with my children's behaviors. You know, and I have a lot to do with helping them change their behaviors that aren't so great if they're having a tantrum or they're upset or whatever. There's a lot I could actually do as a mother that would help them feel more contained, express mm-hmm. themselves with more safety or more consideration. So that book was a great help for me. The one thing that I felt like it didn't offer was how to make good boundaries. It really taught how to listen. And I think it really helped my kids talk so that they could be heard. But I had to work on the boundary part of it and mm-hmm. that part. So I think whatever, you know, I think there's a lot of resources about there. And the thing that I will share with you that was of something that was of the greatest value for me was, so I had a hard time if my kids were upset. I just wanted their upset to go away. And my tendency was to give them what they wanted so that mm-hmm. they'd stop being upset. That's not always a good boundary. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't always teach them to contain their own feelings or tolerate their own distress. So, because that's part of what boundaries do is that, so what I had to really learn as a mother was to tolerate my own distress instead of focusing on their distress. So if my child was really upset that they couldn't have something or they couldn't do something, you know, my first tendency would be to try to make it happen so I wouldn't feel distressed. Mm-hmm. And once I got that idea that, okay, I need to learn to tolerate my distress. And if I don't, they're not going to learn it either.
Yeah.
And that was a really big one for me. And I think it's a really hard one to just sit with, you know, my child's crying. They want something I'm not going to give them. I can't make it go away mm-hmm. in the moment. I used, you know what I'm saying? And so mm-hmm. just be with my own distress and keep the boundary. Mm-hmm. That was really, really helpful for me because it actually helped my kids.
Yeah.
Because they learn to tolerate their own distress. Me screaming and crying isn't going to topple my mother over.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting that when your child is having a temper tantrum, your reaction isn't necessarily to your child's temper tantrum. It's right. to how that temper tantrum, what it's triggering within you. From exactly. your childhood. So exactly. if you had a parent who couldn't handle you as a child having emotions, being upset, and they say, oh, stop crying. The thing that comes to mind is, you want to cry? I'll give you something to cry about. And they're very uncomfortable with your show of emotion.
Totally.
And so now you find yourself repeating that, and your awareness of it is huge.
Exactly. And you, so mine was a little bit the opposite of what you're saying. And I think both happened for lots of mothers. Mine was, my parents ignored me if I cried. Mm-hmm. There was no response. And that was horrible. And I still remember crying alone in my room and crying and crying and crying. And I think implicitly wanting someone to come, mm-hmm. and no one came. And so I think I overcompensated as a mother. Like, mm-hmm. I'll attend to your every cry. I'll try to meet your every upset. And that's not good either. You know, there's some, it's somewhere in the middle where
in the middle.
I care that you're upset. I want you to feel better. I love you. If what you want is appropriate, fine. If what you're asking for and having a tantrum about isn't, we're both going to tolerate that distress and we're both going to move through it and it's going to be okay. But I'm not abandoning you in the middle of it.
No.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And both sides of the spectrum happen where your parent is extremely reactive or there's no reaction. And
right.
Neither are good.
Right. Neither are good. Neither are good. And certainly anger at a child having feelings is not helpful at all.
No.
And I think ignoring is an expression of anger in a way. Mm-hmm. It's just not written. Yeah.
Yeah. How can our listeners connect with you further if they would like to do so?
Yeah, the easiest way is on my website. I have a website. It's my name, www.phyllislevitt.com. And there's a place where you can just contact me. There's a newsletter you can sign up. My focus right now is on a book that I just wrote called America in Therapy, where I'm talking about bringing these healing principles of relationship, healing ourselves and healing our relationships to our country. So it's a little bit of a different focus, but I'm totally happy to talk about the mamahood thing because, you know, mamahood has been and still is like one of the most sacred parts of my life. So that's it. But I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn and YouTube and Twitter and Instagram and all that. So anywhere you're welcome to, but the easiest way is to just find me on my website.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining me today, Phyllis. It was a pleasure having you on the show. Until next time, friends. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to tune in to this episode of the Mamahood After Trauma podcast. If you would like more of the Mamahood After Trauma community, make sure to look in the description of this episode for the link to become a Mamahood After Trauma Inner Circle member. Until next time, Mama, keep going.